Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, to tell you about my friends over there at Music Record Shop. Find them at 4191A Manchester Avenue, right over there in the heart of the Grove, between the demo and the ready room. Hey, this Friday, every Friday, all new music happy hour going on, live record spinning, and free four hands beer for those of age, and new vinyl in store from Parliament, Madonna, Sublime, Angels and Airwaves, Moby, Deerhoof, Iron Butterfly, Rich Robertson, and a whole lot more. And on the weekends, I do a lot of these live in-stores. So Saturday, June 25th, see Ramona DeFlower there, 2 to 4 p.m. And on Sunday, June 26th, see Callaway Circus there. More information on all these at their Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages or musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Scott James. You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast on what? This ain't our own radio station, is it?
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out with Scott James. Welcome to the show, man.
Hi, hello.
I want to say a quick thanks to everybody. The show's been getting a lot of love recently, and it's very exciting, so thank you everybody that's been listening or telling friends or whatever you're doing. I appreciate all the support. So thank you for that. With that out of the way, though, yeah, man, thanks for coming on the show. I mean, this is exciting. I've been we've known each other a good while now, a couple of years, and
you've been ducking me for a while.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you finally.
I think you asked me, or you had mentioned something about doing this. I don't think you actually asked me, but I remember you thinking like, "Hey, I have some openings in April," and I think that was 2 Aprils ago. It might have been last April, but. Right.
Yeah, well, this is 2 years I've been now, so yeah, I know, I throw the invite out to a lot of people. Just I'm trying to get all my friends on here, so
yeah.
I'm sure I mentioned it just about any time we talk to people that haven't been on the show yet. But yeah, man, I'm thrilled that it worked out today. And
right. Yeah.
I mean, we've kind of known each other for a little while through comedy, but I mean, really, I don't know a whole lot about you, besides seeing you at the Funny Bone and things, so I figured this would be a good opportunity for us to kind of hang out and talk and get to know each other a little better.
Yeah, man, we can be real friends.
Yeah, for sure.
Not just internet friends.
Yeah.
We had this conversation about whatever we can. You just recorded with him, Mikey Manker.
Yeah,
who I'm Facebook friends with, and I know I've like commented on things he posts because he posts a lot. And he was at the Funny Bone last night, and I don't think I've ever talked to that guy face to face. But I'm friends with him on Facebook. It's like I see all the shit that he does,
sure.
But I'm not.
Yeah,
it's a strange time to live in.
Yeah, well, I've been since doing this show. Like I've been getting a lot more friend requests from artists and entertainers around town, and people are just. Well, usually we have a bunch of mutual friends, so it's like okay, well, I'll give them a shot until they annoy me. But
this has happened to me twice. Where I got a friend request on Facebook, and it goes to my phone, and I was at a bar or a show somewhere or something like that, and I looked at it, and I was like, that person's sitting right over there. I just walked up to one person, I was like, hey, we can just be friends, we can be real friends.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
But I've been lucky enough to actually, there was like one night, not too long ago, like I met like 4 or 5 people. That I've been Facebook friends with, in person one night. So like, it was just going to shows and things, seeing them out and actually getting to meet these people in real life. It was it's really a cool thing when you meet a bunch of like-minded people that are into all the same things you are. So obviously,
right.
So that was that's my thing. It was fun to get to actually talk to those people and make it you know, real friends and stuff, not just internet friends. And
right.
But yeah, so but yeah, with that, talking about, you know, meeting at Funny Bone and things, and when was that your first mic over at Funny Bone, or where did you?
Yeah, that was my first. This is up for some debate. But when doing comedy was something I thought I was actually gonna do, it wasn't. I didn't think I was gonna go do like open mics. Honestly, I didn't even know that was a thing you could do. Mm-hmm. But there was, and this has probably been, it's been 5 years, maybe six, since I started doing comedy. I think five. But they were doing like a, if you'd ever seen like Henry Rollins live when he does his just speaking engagements,
right?
You know, I've been to one, and that's kind of a funny story. But I've been to one, and I'd watched a couple of YouTube videos, and I'm like, dude, this guy just tells stories. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool. And there was a thing, I think at the time, they call it something different now if they still do it at all, but it was called Moth Up. And I know, like, the moth is like a storytelling thing in New York. And I guess it's pretty popular, but they were doing something very similar in St. Louis where you could sign up on their Facebook page to go tell a story.
Yeah.
And I was like, sweet, I got a ton of funny stories. I got the story about the time I threw up in a toilet that somebody pooped in. I got a story about that time I did blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, I'm going to tell, like, funny stories. And then I got on there, I signed up for one. And I wound up having to cancel. But I was like, oh, thank God I canceled that, because I got on, like, they have YouTube videos and shit from people telling stories. And the first one I clicked on was somebody telling, it's this gut-wrenching, heartbreaking story about, I think, his wife dying of cancer. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have to follow that guy and be like, I just got a blowjob story. Oops. That's what I was going to tell.
Right.
That sounds terrible now. I'd have to open with, well, my wife's alive, and you know what I mean? So I kind of gave up on that, and I didn't think about it again. And honestly, the only reason I considered doing stand-up anyway is because I had started listening to a bunch of podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, I like talking and, you know, bullshitting and telling stories. Maybe that's what I'll do. But I hadn't even considered that there was a Funny Bone around. I remember the commercials from, like, Casey when I was in, like, high school and stuff like that, but I don't think they've advertised on Casey for years and years. And I think, this is my memory of it, is that Mel and I were, my wife, Mel, were out one night, I think at a Friday's or something, and we were going to go see a movie, but we were like, we see movies. We do that shit all the time. You know what I mean? And, I forget why it even came up. I think it was because I was talking about the moth thing, and she was like, you know, there's a Funny Bone in St. Louis. I'm like, yeah, I've been there, like, years and years ago, like, right after high school. And we just went there. It's Donald Lark. It was, like, a Thursday night or something like that. And it took a year or two for us to realize it, but it was Ian Bagg was the comic that was on that night. Okay. And I didn't realize, here's how stupid you are when you don't know something, or you're not aware, you just, like, I just thought comedy ran continuously there. We didn't show up at 7:30. We showed up at, like, 9 o'clock or something. Yeah. You know? And Duck was the doorman that night. And it was like, the show's almost over. You guys can just go in there and sit down if you want to. I remember thinking, like, weird. They just let you come in and sit down. This is crazy. So we went in and saw, like, the last 20, 30 minutes of the show. Like, hey, that was really funny. Not even thinking, like, oh, there was more show before we got here. But we didn't pay to get in. I don't even think we got served or anything because it was so late in the show. They were just like, whatever, just sit there, stupid.
Sure.
Sorry, what was the question?
that was your first mic and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I got on the website after that and then signed up and then showed up to my first Tuesday open mic. And I think it was, again, I wish I could remember this fully, but I think it was Josh Arnold, Dan O'Sullivan, then me, and then Greg Warren. So just me and three killers.
Right.
And I mean, we were like two or three comics into this thing before I was like, I made a mistake. I mean, I worked on stuff too. I read the website. I was like, I got 4 minutes of material. This funny thing that I thought of, and again, it was, you know, it was terrible. It was not great. I got polite laughter, but I think because people, I guess, were like, you know, they bring you up as a first timer, and I think they're pretty nice,
sure,
about first timers. But yeah, I ate shit real hard. Like a lot of comics have that story about them doing really well on their first open mic and then eating shit on their next one.
Right.
No, I really hit the ground running in terms of not doing well. Yeah, I
got it out of the way early, right?
Yep.
What? So I mean, does that just push you though? Like, I mean, you even though it didn't go well, I mean, is that like just a strive to be better next time, or
I don't know. At the time, I probably thought because I was not. I mean, if I was funny at all, it was on accident for a while. And I remember my first couple jokes that I actually got an honest laugh were like, oh, that's actually something that people should laugh at.
Yeah.
That's a funny joke. And it was maybe a year into doing stand-up when I really got my first, like, that's a good joke. Or at least, and I still tell one of those jokes pretty regularly.
Yeah.
It's just I can't tell it now because it's about my daughter, and she's older than that. She's older now.
Right.
So it's like telling that joke kind of doesn't make sense. You have to frame it in a weird way or start it off sure. with when she was younger or whatever. But it'd be silly for me to tell that joke now.
Yeah.
People would think, like, he just said his kid was in middle school.
Yeah. She don't. Well, yeah, that's the thing. You do a lot of storytelling, like you said, about your family and things. So, like, most jokes... Like a guy will say, yeah, you know, last week my girlfriend, or what, you know, it's like,
dude, yeah. Yeah,
it's like, you know, it wasn't last week.
Man. I'm guilty of that too. I'm definitely guilty of it because there are jokes that I still tell because I think they're good jokes. And some of them I'm kind of stuck with just because they're quick mm-hmm. or there's a quick turnaround. And I've got a couple jokes like that. That I'm not going to say I'm not proud of them. I'm proud of them. I've used them and they got laughs, and that's good enough to get me in the door.
Yeah.
You know, with the crowd. If it's something I can start off with, and even if it's a little silly or stupid, you know, whatever, I tell the joke, you know, and it's, I guess it's hacky. I don't give a shit, though. You know, and it's not the whole joke, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, my wife and I have a lot of sex. Like we'll have sex six, sometimes seven nights a week because my wife is a deep sleeper, and you give it. And that joke's never not done well, but it's also not. It's one of the only jokes I have that I'm like, that's not even close to being true.
Yeah,
everything else kind of starts off as something. It was, you know, it's just something you know foolish I would say to my wife as a joke.
Right.
You know what I mean? But at least it's quick. It's under a minute. You know, sure. If it gets a good laugh right up top, I know I've got a little latitude where I can maybe do something that's a little more true.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a little more of a story. Like, I don't have a lot of quick jokes. So it's kind of, you know, you're getting into, if your opener is 3 minutes long, that's a big time commitment.
Sure.
If that punchline doesn't land well, I'm 3 minutes into my set, now they think I suck.
Right.
It might be a long 20, 30 minutes, you know?
So. Yeah. I listen to a lot of podcasts as well, and that's, you know, how I got going doing this. And
right.
It'd
be weird if you came up on it. You would have thought made it up.
Yeah, right.
Look what I invented.
Yeah. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I invented podcasting. And
right.
I started this.
Start getting a lawyer.
Yeah. Just 2 years ago, started this thing.
Right.
But... You know, you hear these guys and they're talking about like crafting jokes and sets and things and like how they basically they'll go up and tell a story and they'll have some punches and then like some don't hit, some do, and then like you just cut the ones that don't and leave the ones that do and try to keep adding more to that. And
see, I've heard a couple. I don't know how anybody, and I would never say how somebody crafts their material. Or writes their songs or paints their paintings or whatever is right or wrong in their approach to it. You wind up, you know, water finds its own level. You wind up doing what works for you, and sometimes it's a matter of laziness. I know I'd have notebooks that are just full of lists, and some of them there's just one word or two, or just a phrase or whatever, and with, you know, that I clearly like scrawled while walking somewhere that said, write about this. But most of the time it's me driving back and forth to work talking into my phone. And some of it is silly, as dumb sounding as, you know, just recording. It clicks. You can clearly hear I'm in my car. Write something about that time you were in Panama City Beach. And that's it.
Right.
That is, and now I've heard it a couple different ways. And I tend to go, if you can't tell already, I tend to go long on things. Like everything I write starts off as something that's like, oh, this is probably an epic 5-minute story. And it's not really. In there is probably a 2-minute joke. And it was, I'm forgetting his name now. Funny guy, local guy. It's killing me now, but it was great advice. Is that he actually said, if you have something like that that's long, or you have a funny story, something that actually happened, try telling it as a one-liner. You know, and I don't have an example that's not gross, because my first example would be that moth story I was going to tell, which is not suitable for the stage. It's good around bars.
Sure.
And if nobody's eating, it's a gross story. But he was basically like, take that and see if you can tell it as a one-liner. You know? Right. Oh, I was on vacation one, or, you know, oh, I got so drunk one time I did this or did this. And if that works well, if you're able to make a story, condense it down to its just bare bones, bare essential shit, and then tell it as a setup, a punchline, and a tagline.
Right.
And that gets a laugh, then you're like, okay, now I add a couple more details. Mm-hmm. And then who knows, maybe that works its way up until it's like, oh shit, this is a 5-minute story now that I'm telling, and it's punched up. But I've also had people say, like, no, you start out with, like, the biggest, broadest, and you put it all out there.
Right.
And then you do that a whole bunch, and then you pare it down to where it's a funny joke. Now, I don't have time for that. It sounds silly, but the few times a week I'm really able to get up on stage, I have to have a mission. I've got to have a pretty good idea of what I'm going to do. I don't have a lot of fuck around time. And it's not necessarily like beer league comedy for me. Like, I've got to have, when I go to any, and usually it's the Funny Bone and Parrots here in St. Charles. But if you're in the St. Charles area, by the way, and you're looking for something to do on Wednesday nights, Parrots, Bar and Grill, kind of off Old Highway. It's, you know,
yeah.
In terms of bar open mics, it's definitely a good one. I've done a bunch of them once, and I was like, I'll maybe never do this again.
Andy Hamilton's been on my show talking about it.
That's right, yeah. Andy's a good dude. And he's got a good attitude about doing comedy, and that he's not like, he's starting his own show. You know, right. That's something. And he took over, I think he's taken over Rendezvous for Arredondo.
Yeah.
So it tickles me pink, because he's a nice dude, and when somebody bites off that kind of responsibility, you know, you don't do that type of thing begrudgingly. You're not like put upon by the world and like, yeah, what the fuck, I'll run an open mic at another showcase. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you gotta want to do it. You gotta want to do it.
I was thinking when you were talking about leaving yourself messages on your phone, I just immediately went to thinking of Norm Macdonald, you know, the note to self, get wart cream for giant wart on ass. And, like, you know, all that stuff he would do. You ever watch that?
Huh.
He did a bunch of them in, like, Dirty Work in the movie with Artie Lang.
God, it's been so long since I've seen it. I think, here's how long it's been since I've seen that movie. I rented it on VHS.
Sure. Yeah, I still have the VHS, probably. I got a whole stack.
I bet I got some around here somewhere.
It's just one of my favorites. I know Artie has a bit in his, one of his specials, I forget which one it was now, but he has a bit where some guy comes up to him with his Dirty Work DVD trying to get it signed or something, and he's like, gives him back a $20 bill for it. You know, he's like, hey, sorry about that, you know, like, and gives him $20 because he thinks it's such a bad movie. But it's like, I don't know, it's a funny little, you know, joke he does, but it's like a cult classic kind of comedy now, you know.
Right.
It's like, it didn't do well in theaters and things, but it's definitely took on a life of its own afterwards.
I remember, I don't remember if I liked it. I know I haven't seen it since that first viewing.
Yeah.
So maybe that says something.
Yeah, well, maybe it's time to dust it off, try it out.
Yeah, maybe I'll give it a second run.
Yeah, there's. Yeah. I mean,
first I got to find a VCR.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, like, I'm a big Norm fan, so like, I like that, just his style of comedy, the way he, just his delivery and things. But there's another great joke in the movie where he's, Artie's girlfriend like throws all his shit out the window. And doesn't matter. The joke is there's another guy like walking down the street in his shirt, because the guy just like came by and found all this stuff hanging outside of the window and things, so he like grabbed his shirt and whatever. So he's walking around, he's like, "Hey man, hey, you're wearing my shirt. That's my shirt, man." He goes, "Oh, this? Oh, okay." And he like pulls it off, and he's just like got hair everywhere, and he's like, "Oh no, I was talking to somebody else that's different than you, I'm sorry." He's like "Oh, okay," this guy keeps walking. But just after seeing all that guy's chest hair and everything back here and all that, you're like, "Oh yeah, you can keep that, and you're all right."
I gotta watch it again.
But anyway, so who were those guys that you're talking about going there because of the stories and things, but was there anybody that influenced you early to saying like, I want to give that a try? And
well, I don't know if it's if you wanted to go back, my Uncle Mark was my reason for getting into music and into getting into comedy,
right?
Because he was a big, he's just one of my heroes, honestly. He was my mom's younger brother, and he was like just a cool guy, when you're young and impressionable, and you're like, having a cool guy in your life, sure, is like huge. And he's an uncle, so he's not necessarily an authority figure. He doesn't he'll let shit slide, but at the same time, if he told you to do something, you'd be like, "Yeah, absolutely, man, because you're the coolest." And he's still one of my favorite people. Yeah. Every time I talk to him. But he would bring over... Oh, well, first of all, he was a big Kiss fan. That was his favorite band. All right. So watching that as a young, impressionable kid, and you're like, well, this is the coolest thing ever. All
right.
Face is all painted. That guy's spitting blood.
He made a blood gargling.
And that made me want to play bass. And that's the first instrument I started playing.
Yeah.
And I still, play...
You still put on the makeup?
No, not just a little concealer. It's no big deal. I got skin issues. It's fine. It didn't really occur to me at the time to do comedy, but I also remember him. I mean, you're talking about when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, would come over to my mom's house and bring LPs, bring records, sure, comedy albums with them. I think this was kind of when the first run of HBO comedy specials maybe was coming out, because I think Andrew Dice Clay did one. I remember.
Yeah, he did Rodney's Young Comedian special.
Maybe that was it. But I remember him and my mom sending us to our room, my older brother and I, which was right next to the living room. I don't know what they thought they were accomplishing, but go to your room, go to bed, it's bedtime, and they would watch these or listen to the records or whatever. And the three that I remember the most are Andrew Dice Clay was definitely one of them, and Sam Kinison was definitely one of them.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't really even need to get it or know what they're talking about to find that funny. And that's...
Yeah, those guys are larger than life. They were characters of, they were...
The character is just funny.
Right.
And George Carlin was one of them, too. But I only remember, clearly one or two things that he did. And it was something about, sneezing and, telling somebody they got a big snot on their shirt. But he also, I'm going to butcher the bit, but he's talking about the music at a party coming down at a really awkward moment in your conversation.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I remember at one point listening to the 7 Dirty Words.
Sure.
What was it? I think they were listening to Richard Pryor, too. But I barely remember it. That's terrible. Like, I listen back to them now, and I'm like, Jesus.
Right.
I was 5 years old, and they had to know we were... Like, we were sitting on either side of our bedroom door Like, probably giggling and stuff like that. But I'm sure my Uncle Mark at least got a kick out of it. Like, we're going to get them into cool shit or whatever.
Yeah, I remember. I can recall probably watching a lot of that stuff, like, way before I should have been.
Yeah, that's kind of why, like, my daughter's just now, she's 12 now. And she's just now starting to find music on her own. Or I'm sure have friends tell her, oh, this band's cool. Check this band out or whatever. But we started listening to comedy, and it was like Jim Gaffigan was one of her favorites.
Yeah.
But honestly, it was just, he was the cleanest, funniest comedian we could find. And she loved it.
Brian Regan's.
Yeah, I think later on I let her listen to some Regan, and so we'd go, you know, and I'd listen to albums or whatever and be like, I think this one joke on this album is clean enough for her to hear, and I think it's funny. And I'd start off with that. And Bill Burr's her favorite now. And that's one, save for a couple bits, that I'm sure if I were to ask her honestly, you know what he's talking about here, she would say yes. But I don't let her listen to certain things. Like, if it's any kind of, if it's anything deviant sexually, I don't let her, or not even deviant, I don't care what you do. But something like that, like, I don't, she's 12. I don't think she needs me introducing that to her necessarily.
Yeah.
But I'm sure she knows at 12. I'm sure I had watched enough HBO, Cinemax, or whatever after my parents went to bed where I knew.
You ever listen to Robert Schimmel?
No.
No? Yeah, Schimmel's one of my favorite too. He came
There's,
up.
This is going to, it'll surprise you how much comedy and music I don't listen to, being that I do comedy and music.
Sorry. Yeah, that's all I know, man. That's pretty much my entire life is music and comedy. So, but Schimmel, he came up on one of those Young Comedian specials with Dangerfield also in the late 80s and stuff. And I don't know, he had a couple like pilots and a couple of things, and just couldn't really figure out where he fit in comedy and things. Never had like the huge career. I mean, he's one of those guys that was at it for a long time and obviously a lot of comedians' favorites, but he just never was that big household name kind of thing. But he's got one of my favorite jokes, though, speaking of the daughter and things. He said, talking about like being able to introduce her to that, like having that sex talk with her or something like that. And he was saying how like he showed her some kind of birthing video online or something, and then like you know, she's like, oh, I thought the baby comes out of your belly button or something, you know. He's like, oh shit, you know. He's like, yeah, he's, you know, he's like, I'm not gonna be the one to tell her that, you know, or something if she don't know already. And
right,
and then he's like, I just turned into my mother whenever I was a kid, like, and that's what happens when you smoke. You know, he's like, the baby comes out where you pee, or something like that. So,
yeah, there's, I think there's so much accessible that wasn't when I was that age, that it was still sort of like, you could get away with bullshitting your way through things. And I'm sure that's how a lot of misinformation gets spread, is you just get like a small nugget of some kind of knowledge, and by the time it gets passed down from, like, you know, an uncle to your older brother to your older brother to you, from you to some friend at school to his younger brother, by the time it get all that shit gets filtered down, it's like, you know, some not even close, but you can just look things up now.
Sure.
You can just Google things. It ruins the mystery of being able to lie and, and be able to like bullshit to people.
Sure.
I totally know what I'm talking. That's actually one of the first things I started doing to my wife, was I would make up my goal was to, it sounds terrible. This sounds awful. It's not. It was actually like maybe one of the first like bits I did, but it was just something I did around friends because I thought it was funny, is I had to make up the most outrageous lie that I could, but it had to make enough sense to sell. Like I could get people to go like, oh yeah, that actually makes sense. Like one of the, I'm trying to remember the first one I told her. Oh, why German food has so much vinegar in it. Because we both worked in the industry. I cooked at the time. And she was a bartender, waitress at McGurk's here in O'Fallon, actually. But I remember telling her some story about we had to do all this like big German menu for some party at a hotel I was working at. It's like sauerbraten and all this stuff. It's German food has a ton of vinegar in it. It's a lot of red wine vinegar. And, you know, just make it small talk, just bullshitting or whatever. And I was like, yeah, you know why that is? And I just made up this outrageous, like, it's because, you know, when their population grew to the degree that you couldn't just have a family farm and eat off that, now all of a sudden people are living around city centers and people are actually having to, like, you know, the first, like, sort of wave of, like, big farms, big cattle farms or whatever. Well, they had to ship that meat and store it long enough to be able to get it to people in cities. And the only real preserving agent they had at the time was red wine vinegar. Whereas, like, in Spain, it was salt. Do you know what I mean? And wherever. So that's why, to this day, German food has so much vinegar in it. And that's a lie.
Right.
I don't know that that's true at all.
Yeah.
But it made... I could connect the dots enough to where it kind of made sense.
Sure.
And there's, like, three or four other ones. So, yeah, I started off our relationship telling the most bold lies. But it had to make sense. It had to be... I can't do that now. Yeah. It's not something you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... what's that? Essex got that joke, like, about Birkenstocks or something like that. And, like, you know, and he's just, like... People... Like, there's always... I've seen him do it a couple times, but, like... you know, but every time he tells it to the audience, you know, they're all like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. You know, he's like, oh, that was... I just made that up. It's a rumor I'm trying to start and stuff. And, like, you know, it's like...
Ryan Stout's got a good one that he's been doing that's very similar.
Yeah.
Or not very similar, but in terms of, like, he tells this whole joke and people are like, yeah, that's funny. And he goes, you know what's funny about that? That's not true.
Yeah.
He has to go back onto it.
Yeah.
But he manages to weave that around to, like, an overall point.
Sure.
Where it's just as funny.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody, you can sell it. If you can sell it like that and people will believe it, then...
Yeah, dude, if you can get away with bullshit.
Yeah.
Just do it.
But yeah, it is a lot less common these days with, like you're saying, everybody having Google in their pocket and they can...
Right. I remember... Now the thing is, like, when we're, you know, stumped on something, what is it? You know, I think one of the biggest ones that I used to argue with people about, any time it came up, I would argue with people about it, and I never really knew. But we would argue over when Appetite for Destruction came out, because I have pretty clear memories of getting that, and it was 1990. It wasn't. It was 1989. And there's even some, like, it might have even been 87.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it just kind of sat around until, like, Sweet Child of Mine came out. And then all of a sudden it blew up. And then there was, like, maybe a second pressing or something. Or who knows? But I would be like, no, no, no. It was, like, 89, 90. And then people who actually knew would argue. And I'd just argue it until people shut up.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I guess if you start arguing, that means that I'm right.
Yeah.
But I would go into the argument fully aware that I didn't know.
Right.
Just something silly to be... Just whatever.
Yeah. I was thinking of that like that, like... I forget what it's called, but like that whole Bernstein Bears thing and stuff, how people like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that thing went around and everybody's like, how people remember it one way, but it was never that way, apparently.
That's bullshit, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
What was it? It's not...
I think it's... Everybody pronounces it Bernstein, but or something, but it was always Bernstein or something. It was like the way it's spelled with an A instead of an E. Or
it's like it's something very obvious. I think it's a lie that it's just like the new. It's like some internet thing where it's just like, sure. Dude, I got into Photoshop. I started spreading around and caught fire.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, it's a weird thing. But people claim like some kind of. I guess it is a real thing though. Like where. We have memories in our mind of like, no, this is the way it was, but it, you know, that's kind of what they're tapping into that, like. So,
well, your memory, that's why eyewitness accounts are not really good for shit in court.
Right.
Because people, you know, just like, oh yeah, that guy's shirt was gray. It actually wasn't at all. It was, you know, red.
Sure.
I mean, people remember way wrong, too. It's not, people like don't even wind up getting close to the truth.
Right.
Like, people are mis-ID'd all the time in crimes. Like, yeah, it was him. Meanwhile, that guy's got an alibi and shit, but still winds up going to prison because they were, you know, fingered for this crime. I had that real bad with Melissa. you know, this is pretty early on when we were dating, I took her to my hometown, which is, I grew up in the Joplin area. There's like Joplin, Carthage, Webb City, Alba, and there's a couple other towns around there, but it's really, I guess the nearest city to that, it's Southwest Missouri. I think the nearest major city is Tulsa, Oklahoma, maybe. And then Kansas City, I think, is just due north of there. But I remember thinking, like, we were on the way down there, and we're going to make a quick stop in Fort Leonard Wood, because I lived there for a little while. And I'm going to take her on this, like, 30-minute detour and show her this little shitty town I lived in. It was terrible. Crocker, Missouri. If you ever get a chance to pass through that town, pass through, do not stop. That town is a shithole full of terrible people.
Is it going to be a sign, home with Scott James?
Maybe.
Someday.
Who knows?
Someday.
Maybe. I don't think that. I think I was only there for a year. It was like part of 5th and 6th grade, I think. But it was terrible. That's the first place I experienced like real racism on all levels. Like overt, like out there, no big deal. We all believe this, right? Right. And like real weird, quiet, subtle racism too. It was crazy to me. Because it sounds weird, but like even though Joplin and Webb City, and these are like smaller towns, it doesn't seem, you know, they kind of have like an old schooly Mayberry vibe to a little bit. It's different now. It's way different now. But like my best friends in like 4th and 5th grade, I went to one school. I moved around a lot after my parents got divorced, because I think we were just basically like, we'll just stay here until they realize we kind of can't afford this place, and then we'll just hop to some other place. But I hopped around at a lot of schools, and it was always like in Joplin, which is like the biggest city in that little area, I guess, I always kind of had like a pretty diverse group of friends, and I never really thought about it until, you know, like my best friends in like 4th and 5th grade, two black kids, and a Mexican kid, and by, I mean, he was like, his mom was like, thick accent. I mean, spoke English just fine. And his grandparents, I guess, they're like in Mexico, because he used to tell me about that. Like, he'd never, I think his dad lived there too, actually. Immigrants from, it's like how there's a big Bosnian population around here. Like, how do they find their way to St. Louis?
Right.
It's strange to me. I don't get it. Like, whatever. I'm glad to have them. Never met a Bosnian I didn't like. But that, you know, for such a like kind of small area, like, I had like one other white friend. I remember just thinking, I was like, oh, this is just is what it is. I watched Sesame Street. I know the score, and it wasn't a big deal to me. So when we moved to Crocker, it was like a real slap in the face to get it like I don't think I'd ever heard the N-word just like thrown out there, and like unless I was listening to like music. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I was listening to rap music, which friends of mine listened to, and you heard it, it'd be like, huh, something I never really, I don't ever remember my parents using it or anything like that. So when I moved to Crocker, it was like, what the fuck is going on here?
Right.
And it's even weirder when you move up here and you hear it, because you're like, we should be better than that. This is... It's strange to me. I don't know. I diverted in a really strange course on that story. Your memory being messed up. So I took my wife, who was dating at the time, to the Joplin area. And I remember thinking, like, it's going to take all weekend for me to show you all the places I used to go and all the things I used to do in my formative years. And it took an hour and a half.
Right. Yeah.
And we stopped to eat. I didn't realize that area was that small and that tied together.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the whole area is like from here to Wentzville.
Right.
Maybe a little bit more than that. But it's crazy small.
Yeah.
Like, Webb City is like, you could walk it. You know what I mean? It's not... So, like, I used to ride my bike all over the place, and I remember at the time thinking, like, it had to be 40 miles. I rode my bike that day.
Yeah.
I got in trouble because I got home late. And I'm like, no, dude, it's like a mile and a half.
Yeah, right.
But when you're a kid, those things are massive.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I can, you know, I don't know. It's just funny talking to, I work in an elementary now, and like talking to some of those kids, and just, you know, listening to like some of the thing, you know, the concepts of time and everything else. Like,
dude, you're tall. They probably think you're a giant.
Yeah,
it's impossible. Like, how old are the kids?
I mean, that's you know, kindergarten to fifth grade. So,
oh yeah, dude, yeah. They're for sure. You're tall enough. I was actually. I'm always every time I'm standing next to you, I'm like, oh shit, he's tall. You know, it didn't help that I didn't have shoes on when you showed up. But I'm sure to those kids, I'm trying to remember. I remember thinking my Uncle Mark that I was talking about was massive. Just like super tall. He's not. He's average height.
Yeah.
But when you're a kid, it's just like, oh.
Sure.
Look at that big person.
Yeah, that guy's got to be 8 foot tall. And I was going to ask you about, what was your first job?
My first job?
Yeah. Were you down there and long enough to get a job down there? Or did you
no, start? I was, we had lived up, we moved up here, I think, in the middle of sixth grade for me. So I went through middle school here. My first job was at Taco Bell, but I think I'd had a couple, like, not really like lawn mowing, like mowing a shitload of them, but I think I'd done a couple little things like that. Like help clear gutters and stuff like that, but it was not like steady work. The first time I had to file taxes was Taco Bell.
Yeah,
and that used to be like, I mean, what a shit job. I left there to go work at Sonic because Taco Bell was paying $5.15 an hour, and Sonic was starting out at $5.75 an hour, which was big time. But I used to work like the third shift, like the overnight shift at Taco Bell. And that was, you talk about some, I mean, there's people working that shift. That's the only shift they're able to work socially.
Right.
Like they have to, we have to make sure as few people see you as possible. I mean, this is Taco Bell, but we have standards here. It's pretty bad sometimes. And I just had, you know, over the summers, it was like me and a couple fuck up friends of mine that were the one guy that used to, I ran into a couple of these guys like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and they're just as goofy, but they've all got families and shit now. So when you bring up something like, oh, remember Ricky used to like, this is shit that could totally get someone, like the pictures spread around. He used to do all kinds of gross shit with his, like, you know, he'd like have the like bags of meat and stuff like that, and he used to pretend like he'd roll them up because they were half frozen into like a dick shape, right, and then like squeeze it from the bottom, and this sour cream comes out of like. So he used, some of this shit is so gross. He used to like clap, like hump until his nuts made a clapping sound and shit like that. But those were friends of mine.
Yeah,
good people. I remember we used to, I don't know why we got stuck or caught in doing something like this, but you know, it was just some stupid idea I got from some other kid that I was like, oh, I heard a friend of mine was doing this, so we should do this. We used to go get coffee creamers from gas stations, like the single-serving liquid coffee creamers, and throw them at people's cars because they would explode. I don't know if anybody else did that. But we thought, like, we knew where our friends lived and stuff like that, so we would go, like, hit their cars after our shift. And the sun would be coming up at some point, be like, all right, we got to, not even thinking like, oh shit, their parents are waking up for, and they totally just heard us like screech off in our car, like squealing like girls.
Yeah. I can remember a time where we kind of did something similar, but we got like window chalk stuff.
Yeah.
And we went around and like drew poop on people's cars just because it was funny to us.
Yeah.
Just stand, just like drew a big pile of shit on somebody's back window, and then like,
I left a pile of shit on somebody's window once. Yeah. No, I didn't. That was a lie. I probably could have sold that.
Yeah, I would have believed him. We
did it. I actually do have it. go on.
Somebody like ran out, like we were messing with it or something like that. Somebody actually like ran out and like trying to stop us or something like that, and then like, They said something along the lines of like, you know, get out of here, you little shits, or something, you know. So like, so we thought that was the funniest thing. So we started calling ourselves like the little shit bandits, and or like, and then we like.
Just, so that was your calling card.
Right, yeah. Just,
okay. Now this is definitely
it was harmless. Obviously, it was just washed off, right? But
right now, this is definitely something. The genesis of this started from a friend of mine. But we used to, my buddy Christian and I, we were doing this thing for a while. I forget if I actually had done it with anybody else, but it was like the first band I was in high school. Nobody else was in high school with me. It was my older brother. He's 3 years older than me. So he had graduated high school, and a friend that was older than him, I'd obviously already, they were both in college, but he played drums. My buddy Jamie played guitar, and I was playing bass. And we started our first band or whatever. And so I always heard these like great stories of goofy shit that Jamie did in high school. Because at that point, it was like, you know, this is like 3 or 4 years past when he was out of there. So I'm sure it like got passed down to me. And I was like, hey, guys, I have an idea for this weekend. So I started doing this and I kind of made it my own. But we used to, in air quotes, decorate our friends' cars. It was vandalism. But it started kind of with the coffee creamer thing. But then it was like, oh, we got to ramp this up. And we did it a couple times just to friends' bars. And it was always basically harmless. Actually, to our friends, it was always harmless. It was always meant to be funny. But our friend Jill, Jill Cocaine, well, her last name's Cocaine. That's her maiden name. Whatever, she's married now. You get what I'm saying. But I forget why we picked on her. And she was a friend. It wasn't like we were fucking with her, but I forget why we picked her. I think it was because her car, honestly, because we all knew where she lived, and I think it was honestly like, they live in the middle of nowhere. Like, we're going to get away with this. Like, I think we actually, like, devised a plan. Like, put way too much thought into it. But I had a little Toyota pickup truck, and this will get you a good lay of the land for what O'Fallon, Missouri, was like at this point. Across the street from the high school, it used to be just cornfields. Like legit cornfields, not yeah. Like that's not a term I'm using to say that this is out of the. It was a cornfield, so we drove, and it was like a really small. It was just a 2-lane road at the time too, so it was kind of you could see cars coming, cops or whatever. So we pulled up there and we like loaded the back of my car with corn, just pulling stalks up. And I actually dropped two of my friends off and then circled around kind of, and you know with a meeting place. So we like the back of my truck is like loaded. It's not a big truck. It's heaping over the bed of my truck with long corn stalks. And you don't realize how long corn stalks are until they're like hanging out 5 feet from the bed of a truck. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we had got like hamster bedding, like anything we could get from Walmart at 3 or 4 in the morning, whatever time this was. So it was like a big jumbo thing of hamster bedding. Like this is something you would buy for like if you sold hamsters for a living. And we got a betta fish, like in a bowl, and a toilet seat. And I forget what else we got. I think some sidewalk chalk or something like that. Oh, and I forget if we... I think we did do it at this time. But you could get a full trout from Schnucks. Like, it was a full trout. It was just gutted and everything, right? But it was a full fish with the head and the tail and the fins and everything. And cigars. And our calling card was to stick the fish on top of the antenna with a lit cigar hanging out of its mouth. And that was just... That was something my buddy Jamie had told me once in passing. And I was like, sweet, I'm going to do that. But her car, we like... The hamster bedding went all around the car and then just surrounded it in corn stalks. It was like 5 layers. That's how much corn we stole out of this poor farmer's field. And we left the betta fish in the front seat, in the toilet seat. So there's like a toilet seat with the lid up in the front seat of the car with the bowl and a betta fish in there. Not really thinking like it's summertime, and if she doesn't get this fish, it could overheat and die probably. But honestly, one of the most touching experiences for me, one of the things that actually like made me well up, is I had to house sit for Jill's parents when she was off at college, and I think her younger brother was in college. And they were going on a family vacation with the other two siblings, and they asked me to house sit. Cool old house, no air conditioning, haunted as hell probably. But I was like, yeah, I'll, and they were like, yeah, you just need to feed, you know, there's a salamander. Everybody kind of had like a fish, and I was like, okay, feed a fish, feed a salamander. You know, they had chickens, feed the chickens. You know, feed the dog, and just whatever, just make sure nobody robs the place, I guess. And I went to feed the fish that was in Jill's old room, she kept that fish.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like 3 or 4 years afterwards. And I was like, no kidding. I guess she couldn't bring herself to just like, you asshole, and flush it down the toilet or something. Right. But 3 or 4 years later, that fish is still alive. And I was like, I recognize you.
Yeah.
Oh, we got... That's the other... That was the... Also, what we did was we stole a... I would be so pissed if my daughter ever did something like this. But we stole a street sign. But it wasn't, like, not a street sign. It was, like, a road construction sign with, like, a blinking light on it. And we covered it up and threw it in the back. By the way, we stole it off of, like, a missing patch of concrete in somebody's street.
Right.
So, like, who knows? Somebody might have driven into that. But she lives in the middle of nowhere, Jill did. So when we took the wrapping off of that light, you don't realize how bright those lights are until there's no other ambient light. And you could, like, see detail inside her house when we drove off. And that was, like, whatever. That was kind of one of the pretty proud moment in high school. There's not a lot left to, as far as high school goes, there's not a lot left to talk about.
Well, we can't talk about this. You have a show coming up Saturday.
Yeah, man. This Saturday, June 25th, if I've got that date right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty bad at keeping those things straight. But it's a Bombshell Bar and Grill on Main Street in St. Charles, Old St. Charles. It's a good bar. It's got a, you know, rock and roll-y, dive bar-y type vibe to it.
Yeah.
They used to do, if you remember Brian Amuge, he used to run an open mic there. And I guess one of the guys that works there, I guess that's where he got the idea. And we haven't done comedy there in a long time, so he wanted to do a show. But yeah, it's a cool bar. I like it.
And then you're a regular, you said, at Parrots on Wednesdays. And
yeah, I get up there as much as I can. I've got a real, you know, it is what it is. Life gets in the way of living a little bit. But, you know, Mel's a bartender. She works at 9, so it's not necessarily, and having Shay, you know, I probably could work out a sitter every night of the week and go to open mics as much as I want to, but
but you occasionally
that's how you don't, that's not how you keep a kid you know, out of prison.
And you occasionally MC and stuff at Funny Bone. And
yeah, I've been featuring which is great. It's obvious it's twice as much money as hosting, and it's more time.
Do you feature for Hawkins when he was in town?
No, I hosted for Hawkins. That was actually one. I'll host. I don't, you know, I'm certainly not above it.
Yeah.
And I actually liked hosting. It's just featuring is, aside from that being there being more money in it, it's more time too.
Yeah.
And that is such a precious thing to me. Like every minute on stage, very valuable to me. But he was one of the guys. I asked if he needed a host for that week, because I knew he was coming up, and he's one of those guys that Matt and Sean O'Brien and, you know, a couple other people are like, oh, he's the best. He's one of the best. He's the funniest son of a bitch. And I'd never heard of him, so I was like, I gotta see this shit. Like, he's one of those guys, like, people would quote his jokes to me, or people would just be like, you know, between Sean and Matt and Dan, you know, say something stupid, and they're like, oh, it's a Robert Hawkins joke.
Yeah.
And they were not wrong. He's funny as hell. But yeah, I hosted for him. It's been a while since I've featured there, actually. I should bring that up in my next conversation with Matt.
That's pretty awesome, man. Yeah, Hawkins, he's one of those guys that's just been around forever, too. But yeah, very funny. I know a lot of these guys, we had, you know, Comedy Central cable and everything, and so I was watching a lot of those Comedy Central presents, like, all the time, and old SNL reruns and all that, so that's my big, introduction to a lot of these guys in comedy and things, so, but...
How many people had you actually seen at the Funny Bone before you knew who they were?
Oh, I mean, I know, I'm sure I was up there times where I just...
just whoever's on that night. Or...
Yeah, but for the most part, like, I mean, and there was a lot of times I was just going, you know, in recent years, I was just going there every Sunday anyway just to hang out. And like, I mean, I knew somebody that was going to be there that I liked. And but I worked evenings, and so I could hang out there and not have to be at work, you know, at 7 a.m. or something, or whatever. I could hang out and because something. So I'd go up there, and plus it was only like $1 with those passes or whatever, those Kilo Diabetes right. Foundation passes. So
and you start showing your face around there enough, they just start telling sure. you, just go in.
Yeah. But yeah, now it's like my cheers, and so I walk in and everybody...
Change.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. It's a cool experience, and like so most of those guys have been on the show now, and a lot of the guys that hang around the Funny Bone. And
right.
So, but yeah, anyway, I'm having a great time getting to meet all these guys and hang out and plug other shows and everything else. So, but yeah, man, come out June 25th, Saturday, Bombshell Bar and Grill, Main Street, St. Charles, 7:30 doors or seating. And
yeah, I don't think there's a cover either.
Yeah.
So, if you're cheap,
right,
this is the one to see. Probably.
Yeah. And then. I guess, yeah, they can follow you online or something, or?
I guess so. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or just look for me, Scott James, on Facebook. You can do Twitter, and I've fucked this up before, but I think it's Scotty, Scotty, James, James, 81.
And, yeah.
You know, but I think I've screwed that up before. So who knows? There's some, like, Scotty spelled Scottie that's probably got all these weird, you know.
Yeah.
That's where all my followers went.
There they are, man.
But I'm not very prolific on Twitter.
Right.
I'm not on Facebook either. I'm just there for the drama.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not very good at Twitter either. I usually just plug the show and...
Well, that's kind of what turns me off to it, is because when you... And you've got to know this for sure. Like, you're friends with a bunch of local... St. Louis bands, but if you get in, you dip into it, and now you're friends with a bunch of like touring bands, you know, it's like lower level, and they're still like promoing the shit out of their shows, or even local guys that are touring, and you get these updates like, yeah, I'm probably not going to make it to your show in Minneapolis today.
Right.
And I've got so many of those that it's like, Jesus. You feel like every now and then one pops up, and you're actually like, oh shit, I can actually go to that. Oh, it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Damn. So I people get inundated with, especially like, and I know this is like on the St. Louis Comedians Facebook page, you know, some big drama over people promoting their shit on there, which that's admittedly that's not the target demographic for your comedy show,
right?
Like the only people that want to see that advertised on the St. Louis Comedians page are the comics that are on that show. Those are the only ones that care. Otherwise, but it's also completely easy to ignore, so anybody that bitches about that is a twat.
Well, that, I have a podcast group that I'm a part of, and I do the same thing. I plug my shows on there, not like daily or whatever. Right. I do like...
But it is a supportive enough environment where
sure.
people will probably be like, I'll check this out.
Yeah,
I'll
like,
give it a spin. He's doing what I'm doing. Right. I should check it out.
Yeah, why not?
I think the same is true for that. Like, if anybody's going to be sympathetic to your plight, like, hey, I really need to try to get people out to this show,
yeah.
whatever, you know, it would be other comedians, but they're not.
Yeah.
That's what sucks.
Well,
if they're not on that show, they're especially if it's a weekday, they're probably doing an open mic and trying to get their own shit going
sure.
on.
Sure. I know there's competition in it and stuff. You know, everybody wants the, you know, they or jealousy or whatever, you know, and things, but like, really, we need to just build a nice community and all work together, you know, and, like, and be supportive of people that are... You know,
right.
But, yeah, like...
And on the surface, it is, you know, supportive and everybody, like... And face-to-face and everybody's fine. I've only met one or two comics in St. Louis, so I was like, I do not care for this person.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around this person. I mean, whether they're funny or not. Is really it's always secondary to me. Like I just like nice people.
Yeah.
So when someone's not nice, I'm like, I don't have to give a shit about this person.
Yeah.
But the St. Louis comics page on Facebook is like there was just recently like when you get to something and I'm checking it at work and I'm like 42 comments and I scroll through it and I'm like, well, I'm definitely not going to comment on this. Because I just don't have the time in my day to care about all of this.
Sure.
And I'm not going to because it doesn't propel anybody forward. It doesn't lift anybody up. It doesn't and there's all this type of shit that goes on. You're like, why did we spend time doing this?
Yeah.
Why? You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, just...
It's just energy up into the fucking ether that goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's one thing recently that was actually, I think, a suitable... Like, yeah, we should talk about this. This is actually something that's important. But even that blew up into it to the point where it was like... JC Sabala, funny guy, one of the admins on there was just like, all right, I'm turning off posts or comments or whatever for a couple of days. And I was like, you made the right decision because this was getting ugly in a very strange way.
Yeah.
And that's happened a couple times on there where I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with people? It's one of them really was about people posting posters and shit for their shows and stuff like that. I'm like, you had... And somebody, you know, it was another comic, bitched about it and was deleting them. Like, you had time to bitch about this, and you had time to delete people's, you know, posters or whatever they were posting on the Facebook group, but not enough time to just scroll past and go on your merry way.
Right.
Just, doesn't that seem like it's so goddamn silly to me why you would get, like, you know, butt hurt over something like that, where I just don't lose sleep over shit. I don't know. But at the same time, it's... I do kind of get it, too, because it's like... But people who know what's going on as far as open mics and stuff, that's what it's for, that page, is to share open mics or shows. Hey, I need somebody for this show. Hey, I need... And that's great. I've gotten on shows from that, so it certainly gets used for what it's supposed to be there for. And that's kind of good enough for me. I've had people... You know, anybody who's nice enough to put me on a show is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does what it does. Sure. And if you're opening something like that up to, you know, upward of 200 people, it's not gonna... Not everything that gets put up on the internet is gonna be worth a read or, you know...
Sure.
It's just the world we live in. Just move on. Keep scrolling.
Yeah. Well, if you want a book, Scott... On your next comedy show, you can find him in the Facebook...
The St. Louis Comedians Comedy Group.
Yeah.
There's two of them.
Yeah.
If that says anything. Do we have... There was a separation of some sort. I don't know.
Right. But yeah, man. Thank you so much for doing this. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah, maybe...
We'll do your house next time.
Yeah, maybe next time we can... dive into the music part of your more,
yeah,
and talk about some of the glory days of music in your band and all that.
I think glory is probably a strong word, but they were important to me.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I love music, so I've been trying to get our friend Justin to share some of those tunes and stuff. I listened to a little bit through he put up some online, but
yeah, there's some of that shit I'm really, really proud of,
and
nobody will ever hear it. There's a bunch of songs. My proudest achievement in any artistic outing I've done, something nobody will ever hear, because I recorded them. Like, I'm not a guitar player. I'm not I wouldn't fancy myself a songwriter or anything like that. But I did write some songs, and I got a little digital 8-track and figured it out enough to record drums, guitars, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Mel sings on a couple of the songs. I can't sing at all. Like, yeah. I'm famously bad at it. And I've tried a couple times, and it's no good. One of my ears doesn't work right. But, yeah, dude, that is... It means so much, and to know that it's just... Yeah. I mean, I could count on, one hand how many people have heard all these songs.
Yeah.
And I worked so hard on them. And nowhere.
Someday. Maybe someday it'll be out there. All right, buddy. Well, I will I'll see you soon, man.
Yeah, buddy. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.